This week in Retronauts, Watashi wa Wario!
Nerds.
Yeah,
all right. Bunch of nerds.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, everyone, welcome to Retronauts. This is episode number 397. According to my stringent calculations, I am Jeremy Parrish, and we are talking once again about Wario games. I know, we've talked about Wario games before, but we have not talked about both of these Wario games before. One of them actually came out after Retronauts began, and therefore was not eligible for discussion of the podcast until fairly recently. That's right, it's Wario Land 4 and Wario Land Shake It. Or what was it called in the UK, Stuart? Was it the Shake
Wario
Dimension?
Land, yeah, the Shake Dimension.
Okay, so already we're getting into the weeds of localization. Very exciting. This is a follow-up to episodes 343 about Super Mario Land 3 and Virtual Boy Wario Land, and episode 371 about Wario Land 2 and 3. So if you'd like to kind of consult your primer there and catch up with our riveting discussion of all things Wario, that is the pair of podcasts that you should hunt down to talk or to listen to, not to talk about. And joining us this week, or joining me this week, we have Wario experts. So over in the UK.
Hello. I'm not really a Wario expert. My name is Stuart Jett, by the way. I probably should have leopard that. I'm not so much a Wario expert as I just have based every aspect of my personality and appearance on Wario to effectively become the closest thing to Wario in real life.
Fair enough. What are your thoughts on garlic?
I love it.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And then over in the Bay Area, let's see, who do we have on here who was on a previous Wario episode a few months ago?
Well, I guess that's me, Ray Barnholt, right?
Oh, yep. And then, yeah, but then before that,
oh,
I guess
damn.
That was a bad, that was, no, that's fine. That was,
yeah, we're
I couldn't think of a good
Bay
way
Area.
To parse it. That's right.
You could have added, like, and is named Henry. That would have
yes. Hey.
Yeah, really.
Hi, it's Henry Gilbert, and currently I am twerking in honor of Wario.
Whoa. Okay. So already this episode is off the rails.
He twerks it up.
He does.
Twerks it up and shake it.
He really does.
Prepare yourselves for a very sexy time.
That's what it was at the time.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, we've talked about the first four Wario Land games, and now we're going to talk about the last two. We did not count Wario Master of Disguise because it doesn't say land in the word, and also because it's bad. And I guess Wario World also doesn't count because it's got world in the title, not land. It's much bigger, even though it's smaller. I don't know. And it's 3D. I don't know. What are your thoughts on those other Wario games we won't be discussing?
If trash, you have throw them in the trash.
All right.
I quite liked Wario World. It appealed to my sort of, I guess, garbage taste. I like the little sort of, the little, it's made by Treasure, right? And it really feels like it's made by Treasure because it's got those little rooms that are basically like camera puzzles almost, where you it's almost like a precursor to Mario 3D Land. You have to move the camera around to see exactly where the obstacles are. It's kind of strange. They're like dioramas. I really liked that. I thought that was fun. But yeah. I mean, as for Master of Disguise, yeah, absolutely down the toilet with it.
Mm-hmm. Hideous.
It's very bad.
Okay, I'm glad we're all kind of working on the same baseline for Master of Disguise, because that game is just irredeemable garbage.
You see, you'd think I'd like it because you press up to jump, but I really don't.
Oh man, I forgot about that. Wow.
And tap the screen to do a dash. I don't know what on earth they were thinking.
It was a wild time, and not every choice they made was good. But fortunately, they did choose to make Wario Land 4, and that is not only good, it is amazing. It is one of my favorite games on GBA, and personally, my favorite game in the Wario Land series. I don't know that it's necessarily best or most innovative or whatever, but I really, really enjoy it. It just hits all the right notes for me. So Wario Land 4, or Wario Land Advance in Japan, Shipped in Japan in August 2001, so a few months, like about half a year after the GBA launch, and a couple of months later, November 2001, in the US and Europe. And it really feels like after years of working on Game Boy and Game Boy Color and just really finding themselves hemmed in by this 8-bit technology, this extremely limited, very constrained machine and technology, the Wario Land team was finally able to just let go and just go for it and really go all in with technology and design, and just brought all their great ideas together into this kind of really a sort of final hurrah for the classic Wario Land series. Because, you know, a year or two after this game came out, Nintendo restructured itself. Nintendo R&D 1, where the Wario Land team was based, was dissolved and integrated into SPD, another division. And basically, there was kind of a diaspora, and all the people who made Wario games were scattered to the wind. And very, very sad. So we didn't really get any more true Wario Land games from this team. But, you know, as send-offs go, Wario Land 4 is a hell of a farewell.
Oh, yeah.
It definitely seemed like, yeah, they were going for a whole different sort of horizon, I think, because it is such a audiovisual treat compared to like the previous three games and Virtual Boy, I suppose, because of things like the features that GBA lent them, like the audio, for example. Audio is not great on the GBA, but the way that, you know, they used it is pretty cool. So things like that. And it's just, you know, I we were talking about Kid Icarus on Other Retronauts. I was on, me and Hendry, and I sort of described that whole team, that whole, you know, Sakamoto sort of team as like the hippies at Nintendo. And you got to see that, I think, a lot in the Wario Land games, where it's a lot more psychedelic. So...
Oh yeah,
you get to see some of that imagery in this one. So.
Yeah, I love the feel of it as this, you know, first year Game Boy Advance game, where every GBA game felt just like so freeing. Like, oh, the colors, the movement, the being able to like feel nostalgic for Super NES games in the year 2001 and just playing them all. Like, it was that there was that for Wario Land 4, but then on top of that, like, it really felt like a whole new level up for the developers on the Wario Land series. You know, I know some people, some hardcore fans missed the no death element, but I kind of like them growing past that.
I thought that the variety in the, especially in the sort of visuals, considering that there are, I think I might be wrong on this, so do challenge me, but I think there are far fewer sort of individual stages than there are in the previous mm-hmm. games, but every single one of them is like completely different. They don't share, I don't think, almost any like assets in terms of the locations that you're exploring, and they're all very memorable for that reason, I find.
Yeah, that's very much in the sort of spirit of Virtual Boy Wario Land, yeah. Where there's only like 9 or 10 stages, but each of them is completely different than the other. Like, there are no repeated motifs, and really, like you said, not a lot of graphical elements carried over from one to the other. And that is something that carries forward here, but there's, you know, like twice as many stages almost as in Virtual Boy Wario Land, and they're colorful, and they're quite a bit bigger, a lot of them. Yeah, so you mentioned the audio visual elements, the kind of hippie surrealism, psychedelia, and, you know, even though they stopped making Wario Land games, this team did kind of carry that forward through WarioWare, and mm-hmm. you can really draw a line of direct, you know, evolution from some elements in Wario Land 4 into WarioWare, and then from there into Rhythm Heaven. And, you know, those had a lot of the same creators, a lot of the same concepts, and a lot of the same kind of focus on visuals and audio that really kind of put the rest of the Game Boy Advance library to shame. And they really were sort of kicking the tires here to see what the GBA could do while working within the constraints of a pretty well-defined series. Like, you got into Wario Land and you kind of knew what you were getting into. It was like Mario, but also not. And this, like I said, this really combined a lot of the features that had been in the previous Wario Land games, kind of pulling together elements of 1, Virtual Boy, 2, and 3, and mixing things up in a way that feels pretty consistent and, you know, just kind of like, you could see this as a final statement for the franchise. I would like for it not to have been the final statement, but, you know, if it had to be, like, it's a hell of a way to go.
The connection to WarioWare, you can just see it if you go to the music menu in this game. Like, when you see the human dressed in a Wario costume listening to music and bobbing his, their head back and forth, like, that's just a WarioWare game, pretty much. Maybe for RD1, you know, they realize, like, why are we going through all this trouble of making, like, stages that loop perfectly and have all these branching segments? Why do we just, like, make 3 seconds of the weirdest stuff possible and have a fun song with it?
Yeah, and those little mini games that you can buy at the shop in Wario Land for, you know, right outside the boss door, like, though, you know, you can play baseball and stuff like that. Like, those really feel like they were just having fun and goofing around and doing dumb things with their technology that really don't have any bearing on Wario itself. And then for the next game, we're like, why don't we just build a game around that? Why don't we take that? And, you know, you look at the talent here, and it is a lot of people who had been with R&D1 for a decade and had worked on everything from Kid Icarus to, you know, a lot of the Game Boy stuff, Metroid 2, Game Boy Wars, and then would go on to work on things like Mario Artist, WarioWare. You have Ko Takeuchi, who would be kind of like the defining artist for the Rhythm Heaven games.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, like, there's just, it's just an amazing amount of talent. And it really feels like this was the team that Nintendo said, yeah, just do whatever you want. And they did. They did whatever they wanted.
Mario Artist has a direct link to WarioWare as well, I think, with there were some mini games in there that were basically lifted directly into WarioWare eventually.
Oh, yeah.
So there is a straight line there, another straight line, which I think is vaguely interesting.
Also notable is that one of the designers, which I guess is equivalent to a director here, there were a lot of designers on this game, but Ryuichi Nakada worked on the little mini games in the Game Boy Camera. And Game Boy Camera feels so much like, you know, kind of a proving ground for what would become WarioWare as well. Mm. So there was this sort of element kind of bubbling under the surface. And I don't want to do Wario Land 4 a disservice by saying, like, oh, this was just, you know, grist for the WarioWare mill. But, you know, this is kind of almost like a passing of the torch. Like, here is Wario doing his platforming game thing, but also doing all this other weird stuff that we've been experimenting with in these other games on other systems. And we're going to bring those things together. And we've talked about WarioWare before. I don't need to relitigate that. But, you know, it is important to kind of make note of the key sort of evolutionary role that Wario Land 4 played in going from Super Mario Brothers to WarioWare, because it's a pretty wobbly line, but, you know, you see it right here. Like, this is the waypoint.
Yeah. Well, I think they're both good companion pieces, really. Wario Land 4 and WarioWare. Like, you really just can't have one without the other. They are the Ico and Shadow of the Colossus of the Wario franchise. That's right. I'm putting them right on that pedestal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for R&D1, if they're just following a straight line from, you know, they had Wario Land 3, and then here's the GBA about to launch. Like, everybody's working on a big game for that first year, that launch window. And so the easiest route is just like, well, let's keep this Wario Land thing going, you know? I mean, and then after this, their new easiest route at the launch of almost every system would be like, well, you could do a WarioWare thing with the main concept of this system, but I guess too, since this system didn't have, you know, a gimmick so much at first, other than just it has more colors and buttons than a Game Boy, that's what Wario Land really takes advantage of.
And something also notable is that this game shares an intimate connection with the Metroid series, in that, I mean, obviously there were, you know, people who had worked on Metroid 2, Super Metroid, involved the creation of Wario Land 4. But also, from what I understand, the game engine here is what they used for Metroid Fusion. Like, this is, they took this technology, the underpinnings of the platforming and everything, and used it to build out Metroid Fusion. So, you know, that's two very different games created on sort of the same code base. So it speaks to their versatility, but also, you know, there is this weird relationship between Wario and Samus. I don't know how Samus feels about that.
it's not reciprocal from Samus, this love, yeah. But... right. I guess they do both go into places and steal things, but, you know, and roll into balls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, I had never heard of the connection in game engines until doing just a little like research ahead of this and seeing how some intrepid person found the debug mode in Fusion. And in that, there's just like, oh, that's just items or level layouts from Wario Land 4 here. So it's that was as good a proof as any that they're on the same engine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if you can call it a game engine when you're dealing with like 2D games, but basically just like the framework. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. it is a, you know, an evolutionary line from Wario Land 4 to Metroid Fusion, Wario Land 4 to WarioWare. So some of the best stuff on Game Boy Advance comes from this game, and it really like. Yeah, it just feels fitting because this is such a good game. I revisited it a couple of months ago for a live stream and was, you know, just reminded again what a great game this is and how inventive it is. I really appreciate the fact that even though it doesn't break the rules of platforming the way 2 and 3 did, it feels so much more refined. One of the things that really makes 2 and 3 they can be a little hard to go back to because they do have a kind of sluggish feel to them. I really think Nintendo, their developers were pushing that hardware just as hard as they could, especially with 3. And the game can feel a little sluggish. You know, Wario can be slow to respond, which works for the character because he's not the lithe, agile character that Mario is. But... But he's, you know, he's much more responsive here, and it doesn't feel like, you know, things are quite as slippery, like there's quite as much of a delay or a lag when you tell him to do something. And that does make the game a lot more just fun, I think. Just, you know, more joyful to play on a moment-to-moment basis. And again, it kind of goes back to Virtual Boy Wario Land, which was more powerful hardware than Game Boy. And, you know, that also had that kind of snappy, responsive feel, large characters and big stages. So, again, this really kind of brings a lot of things all together at once.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think also, like, you kind of mentioned, like, how that team's game sort of turned out, especially on GBA. And it's like, they do have kind of an arcadey feel because of all that, like, audiovisual stuff going on. Like, at times, like, Wario Land 4 almost feels like a Neo Geo game. Just like with all the different things going on in it. And yeah, I get that for sure.
So in terms of its premise, Wario Land 4 is pretty much a Wario game in that Wario catches wind of some place where there is wealth to be stolen and says, I'm going to go do it. And then he is hoisted by his own petard and becomes trapped in the place that he intends to plunder. So the game is partially about plundering and also about escaping and defeating the dire guardian of a place in order to steal all their stuff and get away.
I love the opening to the game. Like, it's especially that it starts. I was reminding myself, like, oh yeah, this came out, you know, the same year as GTA, but I had this feel of GTA, the classic Grand Theft Auto, with this, you know, just black and blue color scheme, and then seeing this like fancy car and a guy driving around. My first thought was, oh, are they referencing GTA? But I don't think so. But I just like seeing Wario be this cool guy in a car as the start of the game of rob a pyramid, like
Yeah, I mean, if any character is going to plunder another culture's treasures, it does seem suitable for it to be Wario. But the intro really, I think it kind of sets the stage, not just in terms of story, but also just in terms of what you can expect vibe-wise from the game, because it starts out with this heavily sampled and compressed song. It's like, you know, super low audio quality, but at the same time, it's got this like kind of almost like Marvel versus Capcom 2 quality to it. It's like this rock song with a little laid back and jazzy with lyrics and a woman kind of wailing as Wario drives along in his large purple, it's not a sports car, it's just like a big old gunboat, basically. 1950s kind of fins and taillights kind of situation.
I think you nailed it. The Marvel versus Capcom sort of feel of that song as well. Just like people who just have a different idea of music than we do, I guess. Shove it in there and hey, somehow it works. It works well for the wackiness.
Yeah, and I know I always bring this up, but you know, the way that the game really takes advantage of the GBA's processing power. You know, the GBA basically just had the Game Boy chip for audio, but it also had enough horsepower that it could stream audio and play a lot of samples, you know, if you wanted to give over that much cartridge space to it. And they really played with this. Like, the music in this game is all over the place. It kind of carries forward the style of the previous games in that the music doesn't really, it's not always very melodic. It's often just kind of like these little, not atmospheric, but just these kind of like little bits of noodling that don't really seem to go anywhere. But there are some songs that have, you know, melodies. There are some songs with lyrics. And, you know, I love when you get stung by bees and you know, Wario carries forward that status effect thing from the previous games. So he swells up and gets inflated. Or maybe it's when you get squished. Actually, I think it's when you get squished. But the music, like, there's this blah, 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 like kind of comical clown noises. And yeah, then the music changes pitch and speed and kind of like warbles. And, you know, even if it's got lyrics in it, it still kind of distorts. And they're just like taking this time to say, look what we can do with this handheld hardware. It's so good, you know, but it's still within the bounds of a traditional 2D sprite-based platformer. It's really cool.
No, one of the reasons the GBA is like a top three system for me is just how good it is with sprites. It's like this end of an era for gorgeous sprites and sprite animation, you know, with pixels, because it's just it would continue to a degree on the DS, and there is some good stuff on there, but like just looking at this game, it's just like a Minish Cap of just these gorgeous, the most gorgeous like 2D pixels the character's ever been. And that's even funnier with the characters like hideous as Wario is, to make him like move so fluidly in pixel form.
Yeah, you know, the GBA could handle some limited 3D. Sometimes people really push beyond the bounds of what it could actually handle. But early on, you really didn't see that aside from like Iridian. So at this point, you know, people were developing games and just saying like, how far can we take 2D sprites? And, you know, some of the ideas and concepts that we workshopped with, you know, the FX2 chip on Super NES. And so you get the rotation and the scaling and just the kind of like the world is just stuff is flying around and so much is happening that you got in Yoshi's Island, but it doesn't have that Yoshi's Island art style. So it gives it a different vibe. It gives it a different feel. But because, you know, Wario is such a messy character and so rambunctious, there is this kind of chaos that feels really well suited to this game and wouldn't work in a more traditional Mario game. It really feels like the Wario character and concept sort of gave the developers license to just go for it. And, you know, it just means that anytime you play, like there's always going to be a surprise around the corner. You never really know what to expect.
I find that you mentioned Yoshi's Island, which is interesting because I feel like Yoshi's Island 2 Super Mario World, which is ostensibly a sequel to, is kind of what this game is to Wario Land 3, because they don't have a huge amount in common besides the character and sort of maybe the basic moves. I feel like Mario Land 4 is like, it's really experimental. It feels like a real kind of passion project in a way. There's almost a kind of dangerousness to it. I don't know. Like the strange music is just almost kind of unsettling. Some of the enemy sprites are so detailed and grotesque. Mostly the bosses.
Yeah, the bosses are just disgusting.
It almost feels kind of a bit wrong, a bit kind of off-kilter, which is what Wario is, but it's never been quite so beautifully done, I don't think, as it was here. Just that you're put into this other world that just doesn't really make any sense, but somehow it all comes together really nicely.
I do feel like there is more continuity between Wario Land 3 and 4 than you're suggesting. I feel like Wario Land 4 is basically they took the sort of structure of Virtual Boy Wario Land and then threw in the, you know, the deformation and status effect elements of Wario Land 2 and 3, but kind of kept that sort of traditional, you know, life and health system sort of an underpinning, which, you know, I think actually works to the game's benefit because Wario Land 2 and 3, you know, they're great and inventive and can be very puzzle-like, but you can also get into situations where you're just like, it's just super frustrating because you keep getting sent back someplace or you keep getting hit with a status effect and you just want to like accomplish this one thing, but you keep getting caught up on, you know, like you're fighting a boss and it flings you out of the room and you have to go fight, you know, run to it, avoid enemies, get back to the boss all over again. This kind of avoids that. And, you know, I think there was some disappointment at the time that it did lose the sort of basic immortality of Wario from 2 and 3. But, you know, in the context of this game, I think it works and just keeps it kind of brisk. And it doesn't impede the experimental nature of the levels. It doesn't impede the exploration either. Like, there's a lot of need to kind of poke around and to try weird things that seem counterintuitive. And, you know, that's still fundamentally Wario.
Yeah. I mean, you have to explore more than you did even in the previous ones, because I believe you can't even progress unless you find all of the metal pieces or the coin pieces or something. You can't fight the bosses unless you have all of those.
Right,
and they're not necessarily easy to find either. They're not really necessarily on the critical path. So sometimes you will have to like replay levels and stuff, which is different to 2 and 3 significantly.
Yeah, and it's probably worth talking about the structure of the levels, like the overall structure, which is very unconventional and very different in that the game, you know, every level you play, it starts out seeming like a leisurely sort of, you know, take your time, be Wario, hit stuff, look for money, shake down enemies. But then, you know, you get to the sort of goal point of each stage, and instead of the stage ending, instead the stage starts to explode. And you go into this kind of like a Metroid escape sequence, but for every stage where you have to get out before the stage blows up. And the further you go into the game, the more elaborate those post-goal escape sequences become and the more things you have to do that are sort of critical to the game while you're also running like mad and trying to escape before things detonate.
Yeah, the escape system is so, it adds so much to each stage. Like, it makes each stage a double stage because, too, once you've activated that frog switch, some exits are completely different. Some doors go to different places or doors or switched on and off wall entrances, like those are open or closed now. Like, you have to do it quickly and you've got this timer just right in your face, like on the screen. It can really lead to a lot of like intensity on there, and I like how the opening stage is a really good trainer for all of that stuff, including you see the frog switch on the very first screen once you go into the first stage, and once you hit it, there's not actually a risk because they give you a whole minute and you're right there, but it lets you know of like, hey, this whole stage is completely different now that you hit that frog switch and there, and it sets off a timer. So you've been warned.
Yeah. And of course the Metroid guys would love making Metroid escape stages every time. Right. So, but it is a neat little evolution in the fact like, yeah, things change once you start escaping. Like that doesn't always happen in Metroid. Like you're usually just going through the same place again. And yeah, it's interesting here because it adds that sort of, let's say, Mario-esque element to it. Yeah, doors change. This, you know, it's like jumping on the P-switch. It changes things.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's a very, that, the P-switch stuff and all of the, and also having, you know, this little key monster follow you around to places and having to keep the key safe. Like, these are the Mario-type elements that really mesh well with the Metroid elements that that this game has.
Yep.
Yeah, it really feels like a lot of Nintendo ideas are kind of bubbling to the surface here and coming together. And only Wario has the power to bring them together. But you know, this escape sequence element, like a concept, really culminates toward the end of the game in one of the final stages, where basically at the beginning of the stage, you enter the stage and immediately hit the switch. So the entire game, like the entire level, is you trying to escape from the stage. And it's what the game had been leading up to all that time. And even though it might seem, you know, kind of a subversion or, you know, kind of untrue to what Wario's about to have this totally timed stage, it actually does work. And, you know, there is a timed stage at the bonus level of Wario Land 2. That's, you know, like once you've completed everything, there is like the final battle that you have to get to in this timed stage. And it really feels like they kind of pulled that in there and said, let's make this part of the critical path. Let's make this part of the main game. So, you know, it's kind of nerve-wracking, but at the same time, if you keep a cool head, you can still get through, you can still farm as much cash and as many jewels as you like, while still escaping from the stage before it explodes. And that is a big part of the game too, is just trying to get as much cash and as many jewels as possible in each stage. And there are different techniques to do that. Like obviously if you smash up the walls and stuff, you're going to find gems and things like that. But you know, depending on how you defeat enemies, they'll give you different amounts of cash. Yeah. And then of course there are the rooms with Dr. Seinstein, where basically there's this old man that you have to abuse in horrible ways to become wealthy.
That's so mean, but I mean, it wouldn't be Wario. If it was just Wario talking to him like he's, you know, Professor Egad, that wouldn't work for Wario. Wario would beat up Professor Egad.
Yes. Or just walk away because he's uninterested.
Yeah, it'd be like, well, a vacuum, what? Who cares? You don't have money.
I don't know. If he saw how much money there was in those mansions, maybe he would go in.
That's true. But he reads things on the surface level. He has to be told. Somebody's got to tell him there's all that money in there.
Yep.
Yeah, those Dr. Seinstein little mini rooms are always fun because sometimes they're kind of hidden, but not really. And basically, they're these kind of self-contained spaces that have very high-valued gems. And often the only way to get those gems is to take this tiny old man who's just kind of puttering around exploring the pyramid on his own and use him as a weapon or just like toss him around, smash through bricks. It's, you know, it's deeply cruel, but it's also hilarious.
They've also got this really great sort of Muzak in the background, which I've got stuck in my head now.
Yes. The music in this, even though it's not your typical video game melody, most of the time it's very memorable. It does stick in your head. And, you know, there's basically a pretty straightforward structure to this game. You have the intro level, and then you're dropped into the main pyramid. And the main pyramid is broken into four different passages that go off in different directions, each one named after a type of gem. And each of those passages has four stages inside. Each stage contains one piece of a key as well as a compact disc. And so you need to collect the key. You want to find the CD so you can see what the hell weird stuff is on the most recent CD you picked up. And then, you know, once you collect all four keys, then you unlock the door to the boss and you fight the boss. Once you beat all four bosses, you take on the final boss. And that's, you know, pretty straightforward. 16 levels plus, you know, the intro and the final stage. So a relatively compact game, but it's one you can spend a long time playing because each stage, well, not each stage, but a lot of the stages really sprawl, and they often have a puzzle-like element to them where you really want to explore and experiment and try different things. It's just a game that, you know, really feels like it's designed around the joy of playing and discovery.
Oh, and on the subject of Seinstein, real quick, you maybe talked about this before in the previous Wario one, but he's another of the R&D like old favorites. First appeared in The Frog for Whom the Bell Tolls, and he's another of those weirdos. I love that R&D one just keeps those weirdos alive. They're like, yeah, he's we designed this cool guy with like honestly a testicle head. let's keep him going.
All right.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I actually find that I have less to say about this game than I thought I would, just because I almost feel like the joy of this game is in experiencing it. It's just, it's so fun to play. Like, I can talk about, oh, I love this bit of this stage, or, you know, like, I love when you are fighting little toy race cars, or when you become a pinball. But it, you know, like, just describing it doesn't really get across just how strange it often is.
I think it makes kind of what could in other hands be quite gimmicky, and I think it makes it work really well. Like, the whole of the Topaz area is essentially gimmick stages with unique things like the board game stage, which should be awful but is quite good. It's funny because when they combine that board game thing with the time limit, it becomes amazingly stressful fun way because it's not luck based. It is still skill based, but it's very difficult to land exactly where you need to. There's a lot of ideas that they just throw out.
There's a stage where you're just racing chains of dominoes, and if you don't outrace the domino chains, it's fine, you can still keep playing. But you know, if you do manage to outrace the dominoes, which becomes more and more complex with each room you pass through. If you do manage to do that, then you'll open up other passages and gain access to greater wealth. So, you know, because this is one of those games that is, you know, very much about how much stuff can Wario acquire, you really want to, you know, do your best in each of these stages. And there's an element to the Topaz rooms in particular that kind of reminds me of Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance, where it has like this section of the castle that's all like these gimmicks and mechanisms and things like that. And I know that's not a very popular Castlevania, but it really feels like for a little while they were drinking the same water as the WarioWare team or Wario Land team.
Well, you know, the Topaz stage is one of my favorites because it also feels like the, you know, the next step in a concept R&D1 had been working on, you know, since at least the Super Mario Land 2 with the Mario toy stages in that one. And this is like the next level of that. And you know, the idea of like, oh, it's the toy world. Like, we've seen that in a million platformers, but they really got a clever idea for this one, down to the boss is a crappy old teddy bear that actually just has like a rat in it, and you got to force the rat out and beat him up.
Yes. Yeah, it's good that they actually worked in toy-like things and stage gimmicks in there instead of just making it about aesthetics, like you sort of say. Like, you know, in other games, they're just like, the toy level, period, and then, you know. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, and all the bosses I really like in how, you know, they're kind of set up presentationally. They do remind me a lot of Yoshi's Island, of like, even down to, you know, you're facing a what is virtually a piranha plant you're facing. But the in those Yoshi stages, which are some of my favorite boss fights ever, but there's really one trick to them, but in each of them. But with Wario Land 4's bosses, pretty much all of them have like a second stage or more, or even a third or fourth in the case of the final boss, that they're a little more involved, and like they all go through a transformation of like, oh, you're fighting the Venus flytrap, of course you're going to attack the pot. Well, now the pot's broken. What's the next step? What you going to do?
Yep.
Something I like a lot about the boss fights is, on top of the sort of puzzle-ish elements that you mentioned, you have got a sort of hidden time limit with the treasure chests in the background that if you take too long, they'll fly away, which gets you a worse ending in the end. But sort of on top of that, once you figure out how to beat the bosses, you can do it really efficiently. You can beat them extremely quickly. And when you finish Mario Land 4 and you start playing hard mode or super hard mode, because it has two additional significantly different difficulty levels you can unlock. And like on super hard mode, for example, the first boss, Spoiled Rotten, is you have 15 seconds to kill it, like, which is basically the exact amount of time you need to do it if you're playing absolutely perfectly. So it takes that, it builds really cleverly on your sort of already developing skill. I think that the hard and super hard modes of this game are so brilliant that they really should come back in every Nintendo game. But we've not seen anything really like it before or since, I think. Just all of the key items get moved around, like, to ridiculously difficult to find locations. And it's just, the value is just tremendous. It's even though it's only 16 levels, like, you're going to, they feel like new levels when you play them on hard mode, just because everything's moved to locations you never even thought you could get to. It's fantastic.
I agree. Every Nintendo game needs a second quest like Zelda.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the bosses are also great because they really figured out here, finally, how to take the kind of concepts that defined Wario Land 2 and 3 and apply them to boss fights that don't feel frustrating and annoying when you mess up. Like in Wario Land 2 and 3, you almost always get expelled from the boss room when you screw up. And, you know, it's very unforgiving and you basically have to start over. Whereas here, you know, the bosses can inflict status effects and things on you. And, you know, they're debilitating and frustrating to a degree, but they don't force you to start over. It just means like, oh, I'm not going to get the perfect time. I'm not going to get the treasures that I was looking for. And so, you know, they encourage you to play better, but it's not like if you mess up, then tough luck, start over. It's a lot more forgiving. And it kind of comes down to like, how perfect a playthrough do you personally want? Like, are you okay with not getting all the treasures? Are you okay with having kind of a substandard run? Then it's fine. You can beat the boss. But, you know, if you really, really want all those treasures, if you really want to max out your Wario-ishness, then you're going to need to really bring your A game against the bosses.
And if you want the best ending, too. You gotta bring it. But yeah, those bosses too gave me another like new level of appreciation for on the Game Boy entries, the art team, because they have to get so much comedy and jokes in the facial expressions on an 8-bit thing that here on this more advanced, no pun intended, system, that they were like, oh, we can get so much more detail in here. Like one of that purple sphere boss you fight, like the second you hit him, the hideous face he makes covered in detail is like them just like showing off, like, here, look at this, pretty, you couldn't see that on the Game Boy.
Yeah, they really went for it is all I can say.
it really does offer sort of something for everyone, because it's like if you want to get all the gold crowns where you need like 12,000 coins in each stage, that's like the ultimate challenge, I guess. You can do that. But if you don't do it, no, there's no punishment. You're not going to get like a worse ending for that. It's just there if you want to do it. There's also the mini games you can fight before the bosses, which are in a sort of, in a way, pointless. But if you're having trouble with the bosses and you want, and you're good at the mini games, then you can get those coins that you can spend on Mr. Game & Watch for him to come and shoot the boss in the face with a rocket launcher or something, which is totally pointless, but just really cool. And you want to see all those animations.
I love the, you know, in the tutorial at the start of game two, every sign that shows you how to do stuff, they're basically Mr. Game & Watch people in the, you know, hieroglyphics showing it off.
I thought it's kind of strange in a way to play a Nintendo game that has a tutorial like that, but it is a good, it's a very good tutorial. It's
an effective tutorial.
Yeah.
It's not holding your hand and making you feel like an idiot.
Yeah, it's true. Plus, there are secrets in it, like any other level. It's very good, enjoyable.
Imagine that Wario was talking to you the entire time, like, and then I press up to go through the pipe.
See, you say that as if that would be in any way other, not anything other than appealing, and I just want that desperately.
Yeah, Wario's the only character I want in Intercom, and as an Intercom tutorial character.
But he started getting really talky in the most recent WarioWare, and it was really weird. Like, he started reading out, like, full sentences of dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the trailer for the upcoming Switch game, it was just like, hey, I'm Wario, I'm gonna talk to you now for half an hour. I'm a big fat guy with a big purple nose. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, the usual stereotypes and jokes and so forth.
Hearing Martinet go through like gameplay features in the Wario voice is really something. Like, now finally four players at once in a WarioWare.
Hey. That's how he started, right? Doing those 3D heads at the E3 and stuff.
Yep.
Last level I wanted to compliment randomly was the Arabian Nights level in the Sapphire Zone, because the flying carpet mechanic is, it's fun, but it's also like this great joke. It's a comedy gameplay element because Wario's a big fat guy, and so this flying carpet can't, you have to jump to get weight off of the carpet for it to move up. If you stand still on it, it just goes down, 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 down. So it's a fun mechanic that also is a joke about the ridiculous main character of this game.
I think the biggest compliment I can give it is I'm looking at the list of stages in this game, and literally every single one, I'm like, oh yeah, that level was cool. There are none where I'm like, that one kind of sucked. There's just no levels like that for me in this one. It's just all gold.
Well, I didn't love the board game, but otherwise, yeah, I agree with you. I did get too stressed at the board.
I mean, I get it. I totally get that. The board game is probably the closest they come to pushing it a bit too far into experimental. But I kind of it's not the longest level, so I kind of appreciate that it's there.
Yeah. I appreciate the fact that the stages don't necessarily line up the way you'd expect them to. Like, you go to the Emerald Passage, and yes, everything is green and verdant. You know, you're in a jungle, you're in fields with flowers, you're in, you know, a beach with palm trees. But then you go to the Ruby Passage, it's going to be fire stages, right? No. The fire stage, there's only one of them, and it's in the Sapphire Passage, which you would think would be like water and stuff, but They mix it up a little bit and go away from some of the obvious stereotypes. So the Ruby Passage is, you know, more like machines and things like that. In fact, you know, you've got the Ruby Passage, which you would think would be fire, but is actually, there's a frozen zone there. That's where the pinball zone is, a landfill, and a factory. So, yeah, they, you know, I feel like that's a hallmark of Wario games, you know, when they're basically kind of saying, this is what you expect, but it's not what you're going to get. We hope you can deal with it.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of fire, the Looney Tunes, but also kind of like mythical fire animation for when Wario gets set on fire for a gameplay mechanic. Like, he fully just is engulfed in flames and then becomes kind of like a phoenix egg to then be rebirthed once more as Wario. Like, that's that cycle of it. Like, he did, at first is like he's in horrible pain, and then by the end of it, he cycled back around to just being this little like red egg walking around. It's just, there's so many, like every Looney Tunes gag with him is just so funny. They get this level of comedy that like no other Nintendo game can really reach, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
I think it's like arguably like a top 10 Nintendo game, like, period, just in terms of the sheer quality of it, the sheer invention of it, the visuals. I mean, I'm trying to think of a better looking Game Boy Advance game, and it really is difficult for me. Mm-hmm. It came out quite early in the life of that system, and it still looks great. It's held up brilliantly.
Yeah, they peaked a little early.
I'd say Minish Cap is still pretty, is my personal peak for Game Boy sprite pixels, but this is very close for me. And for, again, a game that was like in the launch window, basically, however you wanted to find that, like first 6 months, that's an incredible feat.
I mean, compare it to the Mario offerings that you were getting on the Game Boy Advance. I'm not attacking Mario 3 or anything, but I mean, they're all ports, and then you've got Mario versus Donkey Kong, which looks like someone sneezed Good game, but look at it, for God's sake, compared to this. It doesn't compare.
When they won't shut the hell up, too. Like,
oh, yeah, that's true. There was a lot of talking in that one, I forgot.
That's what everyone loves, is words in their games. Yeah, crap, I was going to say something. Oh, right, yes. One other underrated aspect of this game is that the Japanese version of it, which is what I imported because I was like, I got to play Wario on Game Boy Advance before it comes to America. I've just got to play it even though I have no money. I imported it, and it comes with a sheet of golden stickers, and all the stickers have a poop theme. They're like pieces, they're little soft serve poops with Wario mustaches on them. It's really weird, and I don't know why they said we need to put some money into giving people golden poop stickers, but God bless them. I'm so glad they did. I've still got some of those.
What Feely is a Wario thing, because I'm pretty sure that the WarioWare had some stickers with it as well, and the manual being full of gags and silliness and stuff like that.
I mean, that's entirely possible.
Mm.
I also wish it had been called Wario Land Advance here. I miss when things get called after the system they're on. I mean, though I'm also a sucker for a continuation of a numbering across consoles, so I'm stuck in between in my likes of titling.
They could have called it Wario Land 4, : Wario Land Advance. Just to kind of put it in line with the Mario remakes.
That's what EAD would have done, but that's R&D1. It's one or the other.
I'm surprised that this didn't have Mario Brothers on the cart, to be honest. Crowbar that and everything.
It would have been, you know, if this had come out later in the system's life, they might have actually put like a Wario Brothers Advance.
Oh, that would have been so cool.
Like they just take, you know, the Mario Brothers game and then change it to be little Wario sprites. That would have been great.
Could have done it. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's in WarioWare, basically. That's one of the mini games. Yeah, in the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Or I should say micro games, to say the correct titling of it.
Yes, mega micro games.
I love WarioWare so much. It hurts sometimes.
and also, yeah, who's your favorite princess in the endings? I got to go with the Wario-faced princess in that ending. I know it's the worst ending, but... I mean, seeing them together.
That does sound pretty good.
I don't remember the ending. It's been so long since I've beaten this game. I'm going to look this up right now.
The cat turns into a princess, right? I'm imagining that.
Yeah. And
Sorry for the spoilers.
Oh, damn
That cat was a princess the whole time. And the appearance of the princess alters based on your number of treasures. So,
is that problematic?
You know,
I mean, yeah, you know, the faster you beat Metroid, the less clothes Samus wears. It's
problematic.
Well, that's R&D1 for you, and it's 20 years ago. So, you know, I doubt they would do that now in a WarioWare game.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Okay, so yeah, I'm looking at the actual worst ending is this kind of like pug-nosed little, I can't tell if it's supposed to be a boy or a girl, actually, who, like a very tiny child who gives Wario a smooch, and he's horrified.
I think some dumb baby. Yuck. I wanted to. Though also, I guess I don't like Wario. I want Wario to have only interest in treasure. I don't him out for a kiss from a smooch from a princess.
You know, there are endings in other Wario games where he, like, the best ending is flying around on a magic carpet or a plane with bunny girls. So
that's true. His crudeness should also be libidinal. It should be. Yeah.
I mean, he's Nintendo's id.
That's true.
And their libido. Yeah. So, the Wario face princess is between 2 and 3 chests collected. And then there are two, like, sort of anime looking girls if you get more chests.
The best ending one, she kind of looks like a classic Studio Ghibli style princess, I'd say. The height of beauty and grace.
Yeah, I think the second best ending, she's younger, like a teenager, whereas clearly if you get the best ending, she's actually an adult. So Maybe that there's a lesson there for all of us.
Well, look, yes, all this hot or not stuff is problematic to just go that's what it lets you know what the developers view beauty as and how they judge women based on their looks.
Wario is beautiful, I think.
Yeah,
he doesn't. The beauty of Wario is that he just doesn't care.
Yeah,
he just does not care.
That's why I'm saying the princess that kind of looks like Wario. That's number one
totally,
for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen his outfits in the new Mario Golf game. I have trouble saying that that's a man who doesn't care. That's a man who cares very much about his appearance.
I didn't look at that because
he's big pimpin'.
Oh, everybody's wow. looking good in that game though.
For Wario, I think it's just about status. You know, he just likes to dress up so people know he's got money.
Yeah, I think Wario is much more asexual than Mario even. So.
Oh, Mario is horny as hell.
Now
sure.
let's dive into this topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we've
pages of notes on this.
We've descended into true chaos as any Wario podcast should. All right, so I said like at the half hour mark that there wasn't much more to say about Wario Land 4, and here it is half an hour later.
Underestimate us.
That's right, way to go. So mouthy, I like it. Okay, so we also do want to talk about the final Wario Land game, which is not the final Nintendo-made Wario Land game. This was developed by an external studio, and I feel like it kind of falls afoul of the same issue that most externally developed Wario games suffer from. But, you know, I would say of all the externally developed Wario games, it's by far the best. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's Wario Land Shake It, and it's basically a pretty version of Wario Land 4.
Right.
What are the other external ones? It's Master of Disguise, and are there any others? Or
Wario World.
Oh, of course, yeah. So you literally mentioned that like an hour ago. Yeah, sorry.
Isn't there another one? Maybe
Mario Blast, maybe?
That was a Bomberman game.
That's just a ROM hack of Bomberman, yeah.
It's got Wario in it.
That's true. Like,
yeah, but yeah. Okay, yes. Yeah. Someone in an external studio had to draw Wario for the game.
No, yeah, it was just part of this weird thing Nintendo's been doing for a while, that they identify some franchises as not worth first party time and worth handing out to a second or third party type deal. I mean, I did see the Goodfeel. They're self publishing some things, so they might not be like a full, you know,
yeah.
fully owned by Nintendo thing, but it's basically a second party, I'd say.
Sure. Well, second party is a construct to begin with, but yeah.
So
just like money.
Wario Land Shake It debuted in 2008 in all regions, July in Japan, September in every other country, for Nintendo Wii. And as a Nintendo Wii game, it makes use of Nintendo Wii features, for better or for worse. It was developed by a company called Goodfeel, which is actually a company founded by former Konami staff.
And yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, there's basically, this is like the sort of latter-day 3D era Castlevania games and the Goemon games from Super NES and N64. Like that's the
wow.
DNA of this game, which doesn't really show through, honestly.
Yeah, I was gonna say that I really didn't get that vibe at all.
Well,
off of this game,
the most Castlevania feel I got out of it is when at the start of the final boss fight the Shake King is seated pretty much like Dracula in Symphony of the Night. But I was thinking, you know, the Konami exodus, that's, you know, a 2010s thing, you think. But here in the aughts, here's all these Konami folks.
I mean, Treasure. That was a Konami exodus.
Yeah.
This just, you know, it's a cyclical thing. But I do, that is a good observation about the Shake King. He's like, what is a man?
Oh,
there we go.
Now you gotta go back and re-record the cold on intro.
So, Goodfeel got its name because its founder wanted their games to feel good. He was just like, let's make happy games that are positive and lovely. And I don't think that really worked for Wario. But they went on to create Kirby's Epic Yarn, Miitopia, Mario & Luigi Dream Team, Yoshi's Woolly World, and Crafted World. All of those take much better use of this company's kind of mission statement. They feel much more in keeping with the positivity. You try to put a happy spin on Wario, and it feels off. There's no like underlying nastiness to this game to subvert the niceness, and I feel that's kind of where it goes astray. This game just isn't. It's not weird. That's the thing that kills me.
Yeah, that's Wario feels like he has invaded a cute game, and he's still relatively as gross as usual, but he's surrounded by just cute, colorful things, and there's not as much like grossness to him. Like I think especially like the art sense is just so gorgeous that there's not a lot of space for like wanting to show you a truly upsetting image of something. And that kind of feel is much better suited for, you know, Kirby and Yoshi, like that fits a lot better. And plus they are like the best, they made my favorite Street Pass games. I mean, it's hard not to be better than R-Toon. I'm not the biggest R-Toon fan, but yeah.
How dare you disparage the eventual makers of Balan Wonderworld?
those guys, who would have thought that like Yoshi's New Island would be like the best thing they'd ever do?
Dang.
If you ever need someone to defend that, give me a call, because I love Yoshi's New Island.
No, hey, I like it. I've probably said all this on the old Yoshi's Island podcast about how everything after Yoshi's Island deeply disappointed me, even when they were good, like Woolly World, you know, but yeah. Mm. Anyway, sorry, that's a whole other side topic.
Anyway, so the big standout element of this game is that it is drop-dead gorgeous. Maybe it's not suited for Wario, but it's a beautiful game. Nintendo and Goodfeel just went all in on making a graphical showcase, honestly. Like, this is, you know, moving away from traditional bitmap sprites, this is the next step of 2D art. It's all hand-drawn. There's an intro movie by Production IG, and the in-game graphics basically look like that movie. It's pretty wild. It's a really impressive feat, and they created a lot of hand-drawn sprites for this game.
Honestly, too much. Like, it's insane the amount of work put into just looking at just Wario sprite in general, because, you know, a rule in animation is like you can take it easier if you do, you know, four frames a second instead or whatever. Like, you can cut down on frames, but Wario and everybody else move so fluidly. It's like, no, we have to draw every single frame like this. I'm sure they faced a similar issue that the Cuphead developers did. And I feel a lot, especially in the boss fights, I feel so much Cuphead in this game, and just in how it's all just hand-drawn animation, just fighting each other. And I miss pixelated sprites so much. But if they have to go away, I wish all of them were replaced by hand-drawn beautiful animation from, you know, one of the top animation companies in Japan, like Wario Land Shake It does.
Yeah, I think that's the important point. That last part is that you get real professional like studios in on it, and then it's a big boon. Of course, it's more expensive, but you know, you get something that looks better than the average sort of contemporary XBLA game that tried to do the same thing and just didn't look as clean or appealing.
I just wish, not to be super negative, but as we were saying before about this game having sort of a more homogenous look to it than, say, Wario Land 4, I just wish that they had managed to marry that animation with something a bit more character. Because I find the visuals in this game quite flat and boring. as well done as they are, I acknowledge that. But when I look at them, I just kind of find myself thinking, this isn't very Wario. There isn't a lot of personality coming out here. It just looks kind of like anime.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
just any TV anime.
One of the big frustrations for me about this game is that it's not just the characters who are meticulously rendered by hand, but all the backgrounds are drawn by hand as well. There's no tiling. Like, the backgrounds are giant sheets of hand-drawn illustrations. And with that said, I wish there were more imagination in the style of the levels. Like, you look at the stages in Wario Land 4, where it's like, hey, you go to a new stage, it's going to be something totally different than what you've seen before. And you do get a few stages here that feel like they were pulled directly from Wario Land 4. Like, there's a jungle stage where you're jumping across flowers above water that's infested by piranhas that's straight out of Wario Land 4. And it's cool to see that kind of rendered, you know, larger than life, but you don't have things like the pinball stage or, you know, just a lot of the kind of kooky, weird, like, hey, I've never seen this in a video game before type stages. You get a lot of caverns, a lot of mines. You know, you have some castle stages the castle looks very similar to the dungeon, and they're both kind of like this castle in the sky thing with rainbows in the background. But they just, I don't know, they just don't quite seem to have the Wario vibe to them.
Well, I think they definitely were a little too cute. I think the most creative they get in it is the boss fights. I do think they get a lot of clever. It makes me wish there were more than the few that are in there. But then again, you know, the bosses, because they're all fully animated elements as well, the more bosses you have probably are like, you know, exponentially more of your budget taken up by it. Production IG, you know, they're a really interesting company. I've gone a lot into Japanese animation history and on other podcasts, but essentially, you know, IG in the 90s, in as far as in the Japan ecosystem of animation, they were way ahead of the curve on digital animation. Like, Ghibli worked with them to learn how to do it, or the end of Evangelion worked with Production IG to digitally animate it. And so I can see why they would be who Nintendo would turn to for this kind of thing. Like, they had, I saw the first game they worked with Nintendo on was Fire Emblem Path of Radiance, for those cutscenes. And the cutscenes in here, they're so good. It does feel like Nintendo just capped it at 5 minutes. They're like, we can't pay for a middle of the game cutscene. We got the start and we got the end, and that's all we can afford.
Yeah, we're paying for all these other graphics. Like,
yeah,
can't do actual animation too much.
Yeah, we can't grab Nintendo and shake them and click the coins, can we?
No, maybe that's why too. This game is so, I mean, it fits with Wario, but the fact that this is about squeezing all the money you can out of something for a game that is, you know, so under the dollar, the pressure of the budget. I wonder.
Yep, you might be right.
You know, Stuart, I wanted to ask you something about the title difference. Is Shake It not a term there, or is
I don't know. I don't know what the story is. It was the same with Ratchet and Clank, where it's just like Ratchet and Clank going commando. Absolutely not. That's just Ratchet and Clank 2 now. So maybe when they saw Shake It, they sort of, I don't know, the monocle fell into their tea or something, and they were just like, Shake It, how uncouth. This won't do at all.
I wonder, I was like, I mean, I've heard before things are like, oh, that's not to say, like the cartoon series in America, it's called Batman Beyond. In the UK, it's called Batman of the Future.
Of the Future, why? I have no idea why we're like this.
It happens a lot, I think, with Nintendo's European releases and some other publishers as well. Like, yeah, the titles just get kind of planified, like, just... turned into what's going on, just describing what's going on. I don't get it.
They do come off as headmasters holding, like, being against any slang. Like, no slang in this house.
Maybe it is a multiple language thing, because a lot of them have multiple languages. So
That would be my thought. So another knock-on effect of the sumptuous animation is the fact that it leads to Wario being somewhat diminished in terms of like what the character does. This game does keep some element of the status effect, you know, concept that came from Wario 2, 3, and carried forward into 4, but the number of status effects you can suffer from is greatly reduced. There were something like a dozen in the previous games, and here I believe you can catch fire, you can be frozen into a block of ice, and you can be turned into a snowman, which is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And then they introduce one new power, one new status effect, but it's just Micro Wario, like Micro Mario. It's just take the sprite and make it tiny. So, you know, kind of minimal impact on the amount of work they needed to do. But, you know, losing those elements does feel like something has been taken away from Wario that was sort of essential to the character's personality and his identity as a platform protagonist. So it's really a shame. And you do gain some things in return. You get the submarine and you get some other little vehicle type things. But I don't know, like those feel kind of normal. You don't have a lot of other characters who can be turned into a zombie or, you know, become drunk and stagger around. Whereas you do have other characters who can jump into a little mini tank or submarine. That's Metal Slug.
Well, I mean, when, you know, part of their PR pitch was 2,000 frames of animation just for Wario alone, it's like, well, that means he can't really change shape all that much. Or like, if he were to become, you know, the balloon-faced guy who gets stung by a bee, that's another character model. Like, that's probably like 500 new frames of animation or something they're going to have to draw. So I can see why they instead wanted to go with, like, well, a super fluid regular Wario who can just do stuff and but not transform. But it really does take a lot of the specific, you know, charm out of the series to virtually lose all the power-ups.
I find personally that the central mechanic of shaking, I'm not railing against motion controls because I quite like motion controls most of the time, but it's not so much that as the fact that when you're shaking something, that's all you're doing. When you pick up a bag of coins and you shake it to get all the coins out, you're just standing there shaking, which means you're not doing anything interesting. And that's like constantly happening. And I don't know if that's too fussy. I don't know, but that doesn't feel very Wario to me, just to stand there shaking a bag of coins.
It's more Silhouette Mirage or Mischief Makers.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yep.
I don't hate this game by any means. I think it's a perfectly enjoyable like platformer. It's just that it put me to sleep compared to all the others.
Well, I think they're really onto something. You know, the control scheme is just, yeah, it's an NES controller. Hold the Wiimote in that way. And then, you know, they were probably told, like, well, you can't just do that. Like, that's not a Wii game. We're not going to greenlight this game if you just play it like that. Like, this has to use the Wii remote that everybody loves so much. All these motion controls. Like, it's that, yeah, I think the shaking, I do, when it's shaking a bag of coins or flinging around one of the enemies, just like picking up a little Goomba type guy and shaking him until he's dizzy and about to throw up and then tossing him in the air. That is fun to me. Oppositely, the that submarine stage like looks like crap, like just like yuck, boo.
I don't mind the motion controls that much. I think they are simple enough. I do agree with Stuart's point, though, that you just can't, like, have him stand there and not do anything while you're shaking. Like, maybe if they could find some way to have done it while you're moving, that'd be good. But in general, the motion controls aren't that bad. They're pretty straightforward, I think. And I think the part where you throw things with the sort of Yoshi's Island-type targeting, where it's not that fine-grained, which is good. I mean, it's kind of, it makes that kind of ratchet noise as you're doing it. I think that helps take away from that sort of feeling that, oh, this is just a waggle game or whatever. Like, you do simple motions and it does simple platforming things, and I think that works out.
Yeah, you know, I would really like to see this game remastered for Switch, because you know they didn't create these assets in standard definition. Like, there are high resolution versions of all this art out there, probably that's how they, you know, rendered the whole thing to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it would not be that huge a burden to do. And, you know, right now, Nintendo seems to be kind of interested in rehabilitating games that were unloved because of motion controls. Skyward Sword. So, you know, give us Wario Land Shake It without the motion controls, or with motion controls optional. So if you want to play it in handheld mode, you can tilt the system a little bit, but you know, you could also just use the shoulder triggers to do the shaking or something. Like
Wario Land, don't shake it.
Yeah. Wario Land, hold it.
Yeah. Or in the UK, Wario Land, the regular dimension.
Yes, the stable dimension.
Yeah.
A good point there with the HD thing too is that it's a good game to play upscaled in Dolphin. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some videos that I'm like, oh, that, yeah, that looks pretty great, boy.
However, the sprites themselves are compressed. Like, you can see like compression artifacts, so it's not perfect, but it's an all right time.
Right, but I have to assume those were just the way the sprites were taken from the original master assets into the game. So
yeah, no, that's what I'm saying is that, yeah, to your point, yes, obviously they could just make an HD version and get the assets re-imported or whatever. So yeah.
Which, you know, that's a significant task. I mean, we're talking, what was it, 2,000 sprites for Wario? That's a lot of work. You know, it is a proper remastering, but you know, I think the data exists, like the
mm-hmm. yes,
the visual data to work from.
Well, Nintendo has hardly held back on re-releasing other good feel games, you know, with uh-huh. with Woolly World and Epic Yarn. But then again, I do think this game sold a fraction of what those sold. I think this is not Nintendo. This didn't get a platinum seller re-release. I don't think.
I was a little surprised it didn't show up on the 3DS, because it could have worked with the gyro that's in there.
Sure.
The shaking your 3DS is probably not the best idea, I don't know.
No, those lids are unstable enough as it is.
Yeah.
Also, people are going to throw up if they're shaking a thing with a 3D image.
That's true. Ugh.
Wario Land Vomit.
So we've bagged on this game a bit. I don't think we're being like brutal or unfair, just saying, it's a little disappointing after Wario Land 4 and the other Wario games. But there are, you know, some new mechanics and ideas thrown in here. I mentioned the submarine. Obviously, Henry is not a fan of the submarine stages, but, you know,
I like the other stuff, though.
Okay.
I like, yeah.
But the kind of core mechanic that is introduced here, you know, is right there in the title, even in the UK. And that is the shake meter. There's a meter at the top of the screen that you can use to activate super moves. And it recharges in about 5 seconds between actions. So, it, you know, you don't have to do anything to charge it up. It just refills on its own, which is nice. And it refills pretty quickly. So there's not a lot of downtime between using these actions. But at the same time, you can't spam them. So it's a good balance. And basically, the shake meter allows you to do things like execute a, you know, ground punch that causes things to fly up into the air. You know, it may change kind of the stage layout for a few seconds and ties in with the shaking mechanics. So, you know, at least there is kind of a central element that sort of defines this game mechanically. It's not just about the visuals.
Yeah, there's a lot I like about the gameplay. I really like how you the shake it for the ground pound. Well, more of the like fist punch to the ground, not the butt stomp, that can launch things in the air. Like I really like that mechanic of, oh, I have this platform, but only for a little bit. I only punched it up into the air for so long. And also another thing I really like that I was noticing in pro play of it that I should have thought of more when I played it was when you get the coin bags and you're going to shake it, there are better areas. Like if you do it on just flat ground, the coins are going to fly everywhere and you might not get them all. But if there's, you know, a little trench next door to it, or you can get into like a closed off room, you'll get all the coins because they just fly straight out.
Mm-hmm.
And also the concept and the premise, I do really like you know, seeing Captain Syrup return, I like that. I like that. My initial thought was like, oh, she's kind of like Fujiko to his Lupin, except, yeah. You know, he has no interest in her, I don't think.
I can't imagine they've ever slept together, whereas, you know, Lupin and Fujiko have done the deed. Many times,
yeah, but in general, Syrup is, you know, a curvy master thief who leads Wario to his mission, and then at the end of it, spoilers, just takes it all, and it was a con on him the entire time, as Fujiko did many times to Lupin.
One other thing I do like in terms of the game design is the addition of the missions. There's like little kind of objectives that pop up throughout a stage. And it could be things like don't break any of this particular object that appears throughout the stage, or defeat the enemy that's gold in color, or, you know, just whatever. But there's like, I don't know, there's quite a few of these little objectives throughout the stage, and you're rewarded for those if you can complete them. I think there's a total of 99 treasures in the game. And, These are kind of tied to achieving, you know, full completion of the game. So they're there for those who want to chase completion, but for those who just want to play through Wario Land and not worry about all that, you don't have to do these. They're not obligatory. So I think that's a pretty good design. And the fact, you know, the way they just kind of pop up and they're like, hey, as you're playing, here's a thing that you can do, kind of reminds me of Tomba, where you get like the game show announcement, like, hey, a new mission has just appeared. It's a little more discreet than that and not quite as weird, which is a shame because it's Wario, so it should be weird, but it still kind of has that a little bit of that, you know, structure to it.
I think at the time, though, this was like one of the first attempts by Nintendo to do something like achievements.
Yeah.
And now there's a bunch of different Nintendo games that have what, you know, what I would call local achievements that are just in the game. And I think this is one of the early examples of that. But so, yeah, in a contemporary sense, like, yeah, this was more like Nintendo trying to ape some of that stuff because they were finding out that, hey, people like these achievements and trophies and stuff. So I think
I can't believe they're still so just committed to only local achievements. Like it's why my husband waited a whole 8 months to play Hades when I had played like 100 hours of it on Switch. Cause he's like, I can't, you're earning those achievements that do nothing on your Switch. Like I can't do the same. I have to get trophies.
Yeah. It does seem like an easy, relatively easy, add-on feature to Nintendo Switch Online, but you know, whatever. It's Nintendo. They're going to do their own thing. It's someone else's idea, so they'll never copy it.
Well, I guess, too, it's like it would have to be put in every game. And so I can see, you know, as a philosophically, Nintendo wouldn't be into like every game has to have this type idea.
True. Although they really love their games where you're meant to like play repeatedly in small bits over a long period of time. And that's just, you know, it's made for achievements. I mean, you know, Animal Crossing had so many of those, but you just turn them in for Nook points or whatever, Nook miles. So,
well, when I talk about Animal Crossing, I feel like I'm Bobby Kotick, because I'm just like, this is $1 billion of DLC you are not cashing in. Like, what the hell?
All right. Any final thoughts on Wario Land Shake It?
Well, I think my whole quick take on it was that, you know, I think we kind of went all over this already. But yeah, it is a little bit disappointing, but I don't think it's such a bad play of a game. I mean, it doesn't exist in a vacuum or anything. Like, it doesn't replace Wario Land 4, obviously. I think we all know that. So in that sense, like, you just get some more Wario-style platforming. And I liked that at the time, and I still like the idea of that now. But I can recognize that, yeah, the graphics are kind of flat. The music is absolutely not what it should be. It's a bit, almost like karaoke menu music.
It's not Mario at all.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it's from or what it's supposed to be for. It's not this game. But like I said, the gameplay is good enough. I mean, they obviously were aping Wario Land 4. They didn't take everything from it. But in terms of like raw level design, it's fine. It's not the worst game in the world. And we've already compared it to the other external studio Nintendo platformers. And I think it is one of the better ones of that. Mm. It does indeed have a good feel.
Hey. Mm-hmm. I think despite saying it's sort of homogenous visually, I think on reflection, I mean, when did you last see a Mario game that looked different to every other Mario game, I guess. I mean, not that I'm slagging that off, but to see, I'd love to see a Mario game that has 2D animation like this.
Yeah.
You know, but we're never going to get it. So in a way, I'm kind of grateful that we got a 2D Wario game, even if it is a bit more animated than the previous ones. It's still very nice looking.
I can agree with that for sure, too.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't see a new Super Mario Brothers series entry that would look even for like one stage that would look like this. There's so much I like about this, not just visually, but like I do think it's just a really well done 2D adventure game, which, you know, in 2008, if you were getting a really good 2D platformer, it was probably either this or an indie developed game because like most other people had left it alone. And I think too, you know, obviously the team had worked on other stuff before, but for a first published real game by a developer, you know, Good Feel is off to a really good start for what they do. And yeah, I just, there's the animation in it is just so, so compelling to me. It probably kept me playing it longer than I would have to see, I love watching like Wario's, the way they squish his butt going through a pipe that little bit of animation, like, wow, they worked. Or the way his gut moves when he runs. I just think like, wow, they really thought about every angle of drawing this guy. And I also, the last compliment I'll give is I really do love the ending cutscene. I pulled that back up today and seen how, you know, the, Queen Merolda, that she is such a boring looking average ass like anime type design, and when she walks over to Wario just like tosses her aside. She's like, no, I want this coin bag, give me that. Like, get out of here. I like that a lot. There's so much good comedy to it, and maybe, you know, in my head canon, the premise is that Wario travels through that telescope into the Shake dimension. So since he's not in his dimension anymore, that's why it doesn't feel like the weirdo world of the Wario world.
I'll buy it because, you know, then he comes back and he makes more WarioWare games. So,
Yes, exactly.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I think that's probably plenty said about this game. We do have a few letters that I'm going to read. Feel free to respond to these if you like as I read through them. From ES. I get so excited when people talk about Wario Land 4. I bought it on a whim when I got my first GBA, not knowing what it was. I remember the clerk telling me, you know this is Wario, not Mario, right? To this day, it's one of my favorite games from when I was younger. The variety of levels and the different enemies and mechanics are so unique compared to other games like it.
Wow, to go in blind into a Wario game like that had to be a real surprise for them. I wonder if they went back and played the any of the Game Boy ones, you know, with that wonderful backwards compatibility on the GBA.
I'm always fascinated by clerks trying to stop you buying things. I don't know, maybe I'm misinterpreting that. Like, what if he'd gone, I meant to buy Mario, but you don't have it. All right, bye.
Well, as a former clerk, I do know the pain of selling people a thing that then they come back and say, hey, you didn't tell me it was this thing or whatever. So I could see the clerk being on a certain level of defensiveness that they'd already like sold Wario Land 4 to, say, a parent who then comes back like, I asked for Mario Advanced.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that angle. You're right. Yeah. I hadn't considered that angle at all.
From Jacob. I recall enjoying Wario Land 4, but feeling disappointed after 3. 3 was my first Metroidvania, and established a very unique tone, with Metroid and Castlevania both feeling very tropey when I came to them later. The Twin Peaksy score, riffing on Beautiful Dreamer for most tracks, the gorgeous graphics, and music box quotidian settings all contributed to a very unique experience. There was also a strange earnestness to it, so that Wario felt like a reluctant moral force, like Porco Rosso when you save the villagers at the end. Wario Land 4 felt like it was ushering in the brand that Wario has maintained since across the Ware games, the very uppercase random and cynical. I've come to appreciate the game in its own right, but think it lacks a certain specialness somehow. Maybe I'd liken it to classic era Simpsons episodes versus a season 12 episode with lots of jokes.
Oof.
Mm.
Shake It, I thought, was excellent. As someone who has worked with as a pixel artist for a while, I was really impressed, especially with how they handled the tiled, hand-drawn backgrounds and animated smears in Squash and Stretch. I wish Nintendo would incorporate the animation principles they used here into their 3D games like Mario Odyssey. Well, this is not pixel art, sir. That's your mistake. Mm.
You know, that Simpsons comparison is interesting to me because I think, you know, over time in Simpsons, there's the term in Simpsons fandom called Flanderization, which means when you start with a joke with Ned Flanders, every time you do a new Ned Flanders joke, you have to take it to the next level. And eventually you cross a turning point with that character of like, oh, this person's insane now, or this person is ridiculous now to a point that destroys the heartfelt reality that grounded them. And I can see how by the fourth Wario game, when it's, you know, the creators similar to the Simpsons, like, we've been doing this Wario guy for, you know, 9 years now. Why don't we, like, let's get even sillier. Like, let's just get, like, more poop, more onions, more wacky town. Let's forget these feelings.
I don't know if I always saw it like that, though. I mean, the way Jacob describes it either. It's just like they were clearly going, you know, they were going off the rails sort of purposefully. They knew that Wario wasn't just going to be a wacky sort of asshole-y Mario. They wanted to make it, you know, something a bit more cerebral, I guess. I mean, not exactly Twin Peaks-y like we said, but they're, like he said there, but... to the point where it's just like, yeah, Wario's just going to be on a completely different tack than Mario will ever be. So let's just go with that. I do see that, you know, now with WarioWare, where it is kind of like, yeah, it's kind of long in the tooth, and maybe the characters are a bit too clean. But, you know, with Wario Land 4, I don't think it was like a catalyst or anything. But
I kind of feel like it was just an extension of the fact that they were now able to realize something as well as they could in Wario Land 4. Because, I mean, the Wario Land series does get progressively odder as it goes on. Like, 2 is stranger than 1, and 3 is stranger than 2, I think. Yeah. So 4 does feel like a natural kind of full realization of that, really.
I see that, too.
All right, from Martin S., Wario Land 4 was my entry to the series. As a kid, I'd played and loved Mario Land 1 and 2, but when it became the Wario Land series, I turned my nose up at it, not being my beloved hero Mario. When I got my GBA, Wario Land 4 was bundled with it, and some awful WWE game I played twice, and I was stunned at how off the wall and purposefully different it was to the Mario games, and realized I shouldn't have slept on the series until 4 games into it. The whole gimmick of having to rush back to the start of the stage after pushing that weird frog timer thing blew my mind, and I still find it great fun today. Realizing that those unaccessible paths I'd seen as I went left or right through the stage were now passages for me to sprint through on my return trip was so cool. I wish I could see a platformer do something kind of like that again. I was 12 by the time this game came out, so the crazy, surreal, and kind of gross character designs were right up my alley. It was my first Wario Land game, and it's a shame to think it was technically my last, as Nintendo have forgotten the series even exists. It is an absolute sin that there has not been a Wario Land 5, and as much as I enjoyed the brief time I spent with Shake It, it just felt like it didn't quite earn the title of being the fifth Wario Land game.
You know, on the topic of that bundled together game, I feel sorry for them because they had to play what sounds to me like, based on the time frame, WWF Road to WrestleMania, the 2001 GBA game, when in that same year, they could have gotten Fire Pro Wrestling, you know? Oh. That was, yeah. That was my introduction to Fire Pro Wrestling because I had to, when I got my purple GBA, no, sorry, Glacier GBA, for that set, they're like, well, you got to buy 3 games. And I said, well, that one says wrestling on it, so fine, I'll get Fire Pro Wrestling with the other games. And boy, was I pleased with that choice.
I don't know, playing a WWF game on something named Glacier doesn't seem right. I'm pretty sure he was in WCW.
That's true, yes. Yeah, he's the Sub-Zero ripoff in the world of WCW. Yes.
Oh, that was a wrestling joke. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's good for people to have interests that I don't. It keeps the world varied and interesting. So it's all good. Finally, from Jake Spencer, dear Retronauts. Oh, that's very good. Wario Land Shake It is a good game. It's nice. Really nice. Sorry, I know we're supposed to write in with strong opinions, but my strong opinion is that this game is above average and worth playing. It's neither the best nor the worst Wario Land. The animation is technically marvelous, everything stays on model, totally solid, but am I wrong to expect extreme poses and funny drawings from a Wario game? Shaking the coins out of every enemy to max out your score should be frantic and rewarding, and it kind of is, but it's also tedious. But not so tedious that I stopped doing it. Running to beat the clock is perfect, though, as long as you don't miss any collectibles. I remember critics at the time being furious that the game was 4-3, even on a widescreen TV, to which I say, whatever. It's a cool game, everyone should play it, or not, it's not a big deal. But it is, really, very good. Oh, Kirby's Epic Yarn, that's a great game. Kirby's is a much better fit for Goodfeel than Wario Land. They're both good, so is Wii Play Motion. I love Goodfeel. Video games are fun. That was a much more positive ending than I expected for a Wario podcast.
Yeah, about that. Thank you, Jake, for writing the script to our episode.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We should have just read that and said, okay, game over. Yeah.
Cut it short there. No, Jake, it sounded like Jake was responding to us here, but I mean, his many uses of the word good, I'm like, well, that's why the company's called Goodfeel, not Greatfeel. Goodfeel.
I mean, the only thing I would personally challenge in that letter is the statement that it is neither the best nor the worst Wario Land, because I'd argue it is one of those.
Well, if you count Master in Disguise as one,
I don't count it. Well, I don't count it at all.
We covered this.
That's true.
But, even the worst Wario Land is like a high 7 out of 10 for me. So, you know, that's not bad.
I will say that that 4x3, the forced 4x3, is weird. I'm not sure why they did that.
It does. It just feels like, you know, that would have been a lot more to animate. Like I can respect the fact that given what they had to pour into this game, that they had to kind of say, let's call it a line here.
I do wonder about that, though, because there are plenty of other games that are just on Wii that are just stretched 4x3 when they turn it to widescreen.
Well, I mean, guess it probably would have been Goodfeel's first, you know, widescreen game. So maybe they were like, we can't. Well, we're already starting off pretty big here. Let's stick to the aspect ratio we know so well.
Maybe Wario just refused to be stretched any further.
Maybe they were just subtly saying, "Hey, this looks better on a CRT." So
Wario is wide enough as it is.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that wraps it up for Wario Land 4 and Shake It, and therefore the basically the Wario Land series. This has been a fun little sidebar this year, continuing the 2021 objective I've had of actually getting through some of these multi-part episodes we've been doing. We actually did it. Way to go, us.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, all this Wario Land talk did lead me down the rabbit hole of looking up Wario-like games out there, and I'm definitely, you know, it's coming to Switch soon this year. That have you guys seen Anton Ball? That's it's an indie game, a Wario game that's also a Breakout clone.
No,
I believe I saw something about it when it was first kind of bandied about, but it's been a long time.
It looks, I mean, you could get it on Steam right now, but I'm one of those people who's like, well, yeah, I know I could get it on Steam, but when's it? It's not a game until I can buy it on the Switch.
Oh, boy.
I kid. But also there's the Pizza Tower game as right. well.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah. Yes. Pizza
Tower. Yeah,
that's
the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty nifty game.
Anton Ball just sounds like the Wario version of Alleyway. That is Mario in it.
It kind of is, actually. Yeah. Now that you mention it. But it also, though, it has a stage. It has the Breakout stage, and then it also has a stage that's pretty much original arcade Mario Brothers. So,
all right.
Good combo.
Yeah, Wario Brothers. We mentioned that earlier, didn't we?
The King Knight campaign in Shovel Knight gave me Wario Land vibes, because he has that exact shoulder barge move and a focus on collecting money. Maybe I'm imagining that.
That makes sense, yeah. Mm.
Well, I mean, Pizza Tower, I look forward to it being a complete or, you know, a full release game someday, because it is like gorgeous. All the compliments we said to the animation in Shake It, you know, the character animation in Pizza Tower is so amazing as well. But it also, it's not as in control. Like, it is like effed up. It really reminds me of like watching an effed up MTV cartoon that just like yes. aired in a TV ident. You don't know what's about to happen to the Italian stereotype lead character.
Yeah, Pizza Tower is great.
All right, so that wraps it up. We're done. And this is a patron-supported, patron-exclusive episode, so I don't need to go through the spiel of how you can be a Retronauts patron and listen to patron-exclusive episodes like this, because you're already listening to it, therefore you know. And so I will just say thank you once again for your support and making the show possible. But I would like to give everyone who took the time to be on this episode and took a slice out of their Sunday to record with me to promote themselves. So let's start with Ray. Go for it.
All righty. Well, you want to talk about Patreon? I got one of those. My other podcast is No More Whoppers, which I do with my friend Alex. And we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/No More Whoppers, all one word. Basically, you get early episodes, like many things out there. And of course, I am personally on Twitter as RDBAAA, same name on Twitch. I've been streaming a bit this summer. So see if I can keep that up past summer, who knows. And I made a game called Blast Rush, which is on PC and mobile. And my game company is Bipedal Dog, which is Bipedal Dog on Twitter as well. Those are like the three big things.
All right. And Stuart.
You can find me on Twitter at Stupacabra, but maybe not for much longer because they seem to be cracking down on extreme swearing. So I think I'm going to get banned soon. I also have a couple of podcasts. One is Animani Chat, which is ripping off Talking Simpsons. Sorry, Henry.
No, we
go over every single episode of Animaniacs, and the twist is I hate Animaniacs, so that's fun for me. the other podcast is Arseholvania, which is about me and Andy Hamilton going and coming up with terrible takes and then tweeting them and seeing if people get angry, which is arguably making the world worse, but you know, we got something to do in lockdown. And other than that, if you go on my Twitter, you'll find a link tree with a bunch of other stuff, you know, obviously stuff Retronauts, Nintendo Life, and sometimes Retro Gaming Magazine.
And finally, Henry.
Well, you know, if you enjoyed all my talk about animation here and the appreciation of Wario's behind in Shake It, then I think you'll really enjoy the two podcasts I do every week. That is Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, which I also do with the other co-host of Retronauts, Bob Mackey. So Talking Simpsons, we go through every episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. Right now we are alternating between a season 2 and a season 12 episode each week, and on What a Cartoon we talk about an animated series super in depth. A recent one I really liked that I think you listeners will enjoy is us talking about Mortal Kombat: The Journey Begins, because that is one of the worst video game cartoons ever, if not, I'm pretty sure it's the worst one. So you'll have a lot of fun listening to that. We are on every place you get podcasts, and of course also supported on Patreon. If you sign up at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, you will find tons of exclusive podcasts on there as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG.
All right. And finally, I'm Jeremy Parrish, and you can find me on Twitter as GameSpite. You can find me doing stuff at Retronauts, of course, at Limited Run Games, where I draw my salary and my health insurance, and also on my YouTube channel, under the name Jeremy Parrish, where I am chronicling the history of, it was supposed to be Game Boy, and then it started to be NES, and now, oh my God, I don't, let's not talk about it. Anyway, a lot of old video games, and I enjoy it. It's a passion project, but sometimes I need to just slap myself and say, calm down. So please enjoy those rambunctious journeys with me. And so that wraps it up for Wario. And we'll probably talk about him in some other context someday. But for now, it's back to kinder characters like Bowser.